Imagine walking into a room and feeling the atmosphere shift, not from any dramatic gesture, but from the palpable sense of equanimity radiating from a person. This is what happens when Matthew Ricard enters a space. When researchers at the University of Wisconsin placed his brain under an fMRI scanner, they recorded the highest levels of positive emotions ever measured in a laboratory. What makes this extraordinary isn't just the measurement itself, but that this happiness remains unshaken regardless of external circumstances. In a world where anxiety seems endemic, Ricard's journey from promising molecular geneticist to Buddhist monk in the Himalayas offers something increasingly precious, a practical roadmap to genuine, sustainable well-being. We constantly confuse pleasure with happiness. The difference is profound. Pleasure is fleeting, dependent on circumstances, and exhausts itself through repetition, like a candle consuming itself. True happiness, sukha, is an underlying state that persists regardless of external conditions. Consider how we respond to a beautiful sunset. The pleasure seeker frantically photographs it, anxious to capture the moment, already worried about its passing. The person experiencing genuine happiness simply absorbs the beauty, allowing it to deepen their appreciation of life's wonder. One experience creates anxiety alongside enjoyment. The other brings serene joy. At the heart of our struggle lies a misconception, belief in a permanent, autonomous self that needs constant protection. This ego creates an artificial boundary between me and everything else, turning life into an exhausting defense of this fictional entity. Consider how we react when someone deliberately bumps our boat versus when an empty vessel drifts into us. The physical impact is identical, but our psychological response differs dramatically. Our ego feels attacked in the first case, but remains unbothered in the second. The suffering stems from our ego's interpretation, not the event itself. When examined closely, this self proves impossible to locate. Is it our body? Which part? Is it our consciousness? That's merely a flow of changing perceptions and thoughts. The self exists only as a label, yet this label believes it's real. Transcending ego doesn't erase our personhood. Buddhism distinguishes between ego and self-confidence. Ego builds artificial confidence on external attributes, while genuine self-confidence emerges from recognizing our inherent capacity for wisdom and compassion. Emotions flow through our minds like an unruly river, shaping our states of happiness and unhappiness. Buddhism focuses not on distinguishing between emotions and thoughts, but on identifying which mental activities promote well-being versus harm. Disturbing emotions act as internal enemies, enslaving us despite having neither hands nor feet. The challenge lies in neutralizing these emotions without becoming emotionally numb. Mere repression ensures they'll resurface stronger. The goal is to let negative emotions arise and dissolve naturally, leaving no residue. Research shows that venting emotions doesn't relieve tension. Systematic expression of negative emotions creates harmful habits. Those who regularly indulge anger develop bad tempers, while those who balance emotions without repressing them demonstrate greater empathy toward others. Buddhism offers three approaches to managing disturbing emotions: specific antidotes, like using altruistic love to counter hatred; direct examination, seeing emotions as temporary phenomena without inherent substance; and recognition of useful elements, such as the clarity within anger or the bliss distinct from attachment. Suffering is universal. As a Persian prince was told, "They suffer, Majesty." Yet Buddhism teaches that while suffering exists, liberation from it is possible. The sage responds to tragedy, whether a child's death or war victims, with unconditional love and serenity. Excessive grief reflects attachment rather than true affection, serving neither oneself nor others. Inevitable suffering can become a teacher. Guy Corno, who endured months of severe pain, found that letting go led to nameless beatitude, and revealed love as the very fabric of this universe. With physical pain, we must separate the physiological sensation from mental suffering. Buddhism uses mental imagery, now validated by science, to modify pain perception, with studies showing mental methods improve pain endurance in 85% of cases. Desire naturally motivates life, but there's a key difference between deep aspirations and obsessive craving. When mature and selfless, desire fuels our greatest qualities. When egocentric, it breeds endless preoccupation. Desire becomes toxic when it turns to obsession or attachment. Like drinking salt water, satisfying desires only increases thirst, leading to addiction. Research shows we can reach wanting without liking, pursuing what no longer satisfies us. True love differs from possessive attachment like a crystal's pure tone versus the finger that stifles it. Altruistic love means sharing joy and contributing to others' happiness without self-centered distortion. Instead of anxiously seeking gratification, we receive love joyfully while caring for others' well-being. This love extends universally, even to enemies, recognizing that all beings wish to avoid suffering. Like the sun shining impartially yet warming those nearest, we can cultivate goodness for all while maintaining special relationships. Hatred is the most destructive mental poison, driving violence and assaults on human dignity. When attacked, our instinct demands retaliation, perpetuating endless cycles of resentment. As Buddha taught, if hatred responds to hatred, hatred will never end. We can oppose injustice and oppression without succumbing to hatred. Those in hatred's grip should be viewed as patients needing healing, not punishment. We must separate our repulsion for terrible acts from condemning the person. Even the cruelest individuals weren't born that way and can change. Forgiveness acknowledges human transformation rather than dwelling on past deeds. After the Oklahoma City bombing, a victim's father noted, "Another death isn't going to ease my sorrow." A monk imprisoned in Chinese labor camps for 25 years told the Dalai Lama his greatest fear was hating his torturers, as it would destroy himself. Our only legitimate target should be hatred itself, a relentless enemy that destroys lives. As Khyentse Rinpoche advised, redirect hatred away from its usual targets and toward itself. Hatred is your real enemy. Recent psychological research across 70 countries shows that external conditions influence only 10 to 15% of happiness. Genes determine about 25%, and we can actively shape the rest through our choices and mindset. While money matters for basic needs, additional wealth beyond subsistence brings diminishing returns to happiness. Much of our discontent stems from social comparison rather than actual deprivation. Happiness correlates less with IQ or physical attributes than with emotional intelligence, our ability to understand our own and others' feelings. Happy individuals tend to be extroverted, empathetic, and believe in their agency. Neuroscience now recognizes the brain's remarkable plasticity, its ability to change through experience. Studies of meditation demonstrate this plasticity, with experienced meditators showing enhanced gamma wave activity and neurosynchronization. True happiness emerges not from external achievements, but from mastering our inner world. By understanding our minds, transforming our relationship with emotions, and cultivating compassion, we can access lasting joy independent of circumstances. This approach doesn't avoid reality. It enables deeper, more conscious engagement with life through transformed awareness.